Today's daf is daf Tes Vav in the Gemara in Shabbos. And we are beginning B'ezus Hashem, four lines from the top with the words Gufa. Today's shir is being learned, Lila Nishmas Francine Solomon, Fega Bas Shlomo Zev, Jared Solomon's mother. Her neshama and all the neshamas we've learned for should have an aliyah. In yesterday's shir, we learned a lot of very interesting things. And amongst them, we said there were three machlokasin between Shammai and Hillel. There were 18 that were discussed in the attic of Hananiah ben Chizkia, but there were three that we mentioned that were machlokas directly with the Rabbeim, with Shammai and Hillel. So what are those three? Today we'll discuss them at the beginning of the Shia. Gufa. Gufa always means to refer back to a piece of the Gemara in its entirety. So Omer Rav Huna stated, Begimu Makomos Nechaku Shammai v'Hillel. In three places we find that there was a machlokas between Shammai and Hillel themselves, not Beis Shammai Beis Hillel, but Shammai and Hillel themselves. First one is as follows. This deals with the requirement to take off a piece of dough called challah, which is a type of truma, from a dough that's baked of a certain size. Today, this halacha applies as well. Unfortunately, we can't eat the challah, though there are opinions, we learned them, if you remember recently in the Gemara, towards the end of the previous cycle, that said that maybe it is possible to actually have in chutz la'aretz to eat certain types of dirabanan challah. But in any event, the obligation to take off from a dough that's of a certain size is a d'oraisa obligation. It's one of the 24 matonos that we give to Kohanim, and this is called challah. It has nothing to do with challah that we eat on Shabbos, but it is a din of a type of truma. In any event, how much dough do you actually have to make in order when this obligation kicks in? Just for the lamaisa, in our terms, the amount that we say that you have to make a bracha on, it's a vadai, it's about 5 pounds of dough. And we take off challah, with mafrish challah, without a bracha, if you're making between 2.5 and 5 pounds of dough. If you're making less than 2.5 pounds of dough, so then we're not obligated even with the rabbanon, and even without a bracha, to take off challah. In any event, what is the machlokas here between Hillel and Shammai? Shammai Omer, Shammai says that you start off with a kav. A kav is a certain measure, which is the size of 4 revias hakav. Again, not surprisingly, it's like saying that a quarter is a quarter of a dollar. So this kav is made up of 4 revias. If you have a dough that is the size of a kav's worth of flour and water mixed together, so then you're obligated to take off challah. That's the opinion of Shammai. Hillel disagrees. Hillel says the obligation only kicks in if you have a much larger amount. Hillomar mikabayim, if you have 2 kavs worth of dough, so then you have to go and take off challah. If you have less than that, you're not obligated. These are the first two opinions. There's a third, and we'll see a fourth opinion. V'chacham lomrim lo kidivrezev lo kidivrezev. Chacham say that neither Hillel nor Shammai are correct. Instead, they actually use a different measuring system, which I'll talk about right now, to get to their shita. Now, there were 3 sizes over history in Jewish history. The first one was called the sizes that we use in the Midbar. After a period of time, those sizes were changed, and they started using what's known as the Yerushalmi sizes. And then after a period of time, they started using what are known as the Tzipori sizes. Each one was different. There was like an inflation factor, if you wish, that kicked in. So each one became different than the one before it. Now, Hillel and Shammai are referring to the sizes that were found in the Midbar. But the Chacham Moviyah are referring to the sizes that are found in Yerushalmi size, which is a later period of time. So the Chacham say it's not like Hillel that says 2 kavs, not like Shammai that says 1 kav, but they say Ella kavu mechza. It's actually a 1.5 kav shir, is chayev b'chala. And this is using the midos of Yerushalayim, not the midos of the Midbar. And then, when the midos changed again, each time the inflation went up and increased the size of the midos, so either going up by a sixth or by a fifth, whether you're going from the inside or the outside, so they said, Mishehigdilu amidos, as Rashi points out, via himidas tzipori. Now, the third time the midos went, first again the Midbar, then Yerushalmi sizes, and then Tzipori sizes. So Mishigdilu Amidos Amru Chameshes Revoim Kema Chayav Mechala. They said over here now that the Lugin, which is the Rova Hakav over here, Hey Revoim Lugin Shem Revias Hakav, now that went up to be a higher size. And therefore, they disagree with Shammai's and Hillel's size for how much flour you need to make challah. And finally, the fourth and final sheet is Rav Yosef Omer, Hey Pturin. If you have exactly what the Chacham said, that's actually too small. That is going to be parted from the chiyuv to take challah. But if you have hay va'od, but if you have a little bit more than hay, chayovim, then you would in fact be chayiv. So therefore, we have these 4 shitas over here, and we now know what the machlokas number 1 is between Hillel and Shammai. Again, this is a somewhat complicated sugya. in terms of the measurements themselves, not so hard to understand it, just how you get to each of the measurements. Rashi goes and explains where they got the shita from. This is based upon the psukim to tell us that it was an asiris or eifa. It's 1/10 of an eifa. An eifa, if you go through all the calculations, going through the measurements, going from an eifa to a saw, to a kav, to a lug, to a beitza, and each of them has a ratio in between them, between an eifa and a saw, it's a 1-3 ratio, 3 saw to an eifa. Between a kav and a saw, it's a 6-1 ratio, 6 kav to a saw. Between a log, which is a rev, a quarter of a kav, so it's going to be a 4-1 ratio, obviously, and a beitza, which is going to be a 6-1 ratio, 6 beitzim to a log. If you go through that whole progression, you see that actually there are 432 beitzim to an eifa. Now that's with the original measurements. And then Shammai and Hillel argue about whether the asiris or eifa is from the inside or from the outside. And without going into all of the details, because it's not really pertinent to our understanding of the Gemara, we're just interested in saying that this was the machlokas Shammai and Hillel over here, which is what we're interested in. That is the first machlokas. Now we go to the second of the three machlokasin that Rav Huna brings down. So the second one is Ve'idach. The next one, Hillel Omer, Melohin Mayim She'uvim Poslinus HaMikvah. Very careful in his language. We'll see, bring him down a beautiful Vilna Gaon in a moment. So Hillel says over here that the amount of drawn water, Mayim She'uvim means non-rain water. You filled up a bucket and you poured it into the mikvah. So if you have a mikvah that's kosher, you have 40 saw, so then you can add the Atlantic Ocean to it and it doesn't ruin the mikvah. But if you have less than 40 saw and you add into it a certain amount of mayim shuvim, that will passel the good rainwater that you have there that hasn't yet reached the full size of 40 saw for a mikvah. So how much mayim shuvim ruins the mikvah? So the first opinion is Hillel's opinion. And he says it's going to be possibly in the mikvah if you have a hin, a malohin. Hin. He specifically uses the word malohin. A hin is 12 lugin. So therefore, if you pour in 12 lugin of water, it will possibly the mikvah. Now, the Gemara now adds an interesting statement. Why did Hillel say malohin? Shechayev odem lomar beloshen rabba. Because a person has to say a halacha that he heard exactly the way he heard it. And therefore, he has to say the exact loshen that his Rebbe said. And Hillel's Rebbe, Shmai Vatayin, they said the word malohin. Now, why is that important for us to say this over here? Why are they mentioning this? Because that wasn't the normal language they used. The hin is a very large measure, and it wasn't a commonly used measure. So people would normally refer to something in lugin, or revias alug. So it would have been very appropriate for Hillel to have said, the shear is 12 lugin. Why did he use the term a hin? So the Vilna Gaon gives a beautiful, beautiful explanation. He said the Shmayev and Atayin, they were gerim, and they had trouble pronouncing the hey for some reason. So it would have sounded, potentially, if they had said hin, just hin, it would have sounded like in, which is no, there is no din of mayim shuvim poslim, as opposed to 12 lugin, hin's worth of mayim shuvim is poslim. And therefore, they had to say malohin, so nobody would mistakenly think that they said in, which means no, mayim shuvim is poslim. So therefore, that is why Shmayin and Avtayin, they said the word malohin. And Hillel, who could pronounce the difference, the word differently between hin and in, so therefore there was no concern that Hillel would make the mistake. Nevertheless, to show cover to his Rabbeim, he therefore said malohin, because that's the way he heard it from his Rabbeim. What a beautiful explanation. In any event, that's what he says, chayv odem lomar beloshen rabba. That's the opinion of Hillel. You need 12 lugin. Shama yomer tisho kavin. You need to have 9 kavim. Now a kav is equal to 4 lugin. So 9 kavim, 9 times 4 is 36 lugin. So Hillel says if you pour in just 12 lugin, you're going to passel the mikvah. Shammai has actually a more lenient approach. They say you need to pour in 36 lugin in order to passel the mikvah. So those are those two opinions. And again, along come the chachamim. The chachamim in loki divrezeh, loki divrezeh. Neither Shammai nor Hillel are correct. What is the answer? Nobody knew the answer. Achabo beis gardiyim mishara ashpa shibushlaim. Until two weavers. A weaver is a very, very low profession. Rashi points out that weavers aren't allowed to be a kohen gadol or a melech because it's such a low profession, and it would be a degradation of the kavod that a king or a kohen gadol has to have if he had a prior history of being a weaver. And they also were by shara ashpa. Shara ashpa is the dung gate, the garbage gate. And therefore, that's another very negative type of a statement over here. So we have two negative statements, that they were weavers, which is a very low profession, and they were by the Shara Ashba. And Rashi will explain to us a beautiful answer in a moment why this information is provided to us. But first, let's understand what they provided. So these two people said, Ve'idu, they testified, Mishum Shmayev Avtayin, Hillel's Rabbeim, Sheshlosha Lugin Mayim Shuvin Poslin Esamikba. They said that Hillel was not correct. maybe originally Shemaya and Avtalion said Melohin, but they subsequently changed their minds and they lowered it from 12 lugin to just 3 lugin of Mayim Sheuvin with Pasul de Mikvah. And everybody accepted their opinion. Vekimu Chachamim is the Reim, including Hillel and Shammai. They accepted their opinion, and that became the halacha lemaisa, and that is the halacha lemaisa today. That if you have a mikvah that has 39 sod in it, and you add 3 lugin of mayim shuvim, so it will passel that mikvah. It will no longer be able to be a kosher mikvah because of the mayim shuvim that you added to it. Now, I said Rashi is a beautiful shadow here. So Rashi asks, why are you telling me all this information? He says, why over here, lomo huskar shame. Why do you tell me they're weavers? Why do you tell me their profession? B'shem Akobim, that they were by Shara Ashba. So he tells us, Lo mar shalo yimona odam atzmoi beis ha-medrash. Nobody should think that they're not entitled to learn Torah. She'en lucha umnus b'chusim igardi. There's no profession that's lower than the weavers. She'en ma'midim menu l'koin gadlu lo melech. As I said, you can't appoint a king or a koin gadlu who previously was a weaver. And the ain shab yushlaim pochus b'shara Ashba. And the least impressive, prestigious gate that you could enter in Shlaim was the Shara Ashba, and nevertheless, the Chriu Beidusun Kochach Misrael, nevertheless, these two low people from a low standing in every way were able to influence Hillel and Shammai and have the Halacha Paskin like them. The message is nobody is not entitled to learn Torah, and nobody cannot be a great person and influence what the Halacha should be. All you have to do is put in your time and effort. This is a very especially important maybe message now for us when we're in this difficult time when none of us are able to go to a shul and you're listening to this over a recording rather than a live session of Daf Yomi. So things are tough. We're in a, quote, low standing right now, but it's an opportunity for us to strengthen ourselves and make ourselves reach even higher spiritual planes. The third and final reason that Rav Huna brings down, that was a machlok, and that reason, the third machlok is between Hillel and Shammai, v'idoch. The third one is, Shammai omer kol enoshim dayin shaitun, v'hillel omer mipkida l'pkida. Now, we didn't learn the Gemara Nida that long ago, but let's remind ourselves what this is talking about. If a woman who has been previously tar sees blood, so what happens to all the taharos, all the ritually pure food and items that she comes into contact with? Is it either she would make them tummy? So she sees blood right now. So she sees blood at 4 o'clock on a Friday afternoon. So what is the status of the taharos that she worked on at 3 o'clock in the afternoon? So Shammai says, "Kol anoshim dayun shaitan." You only go forward at 4 o'clock. Anything she touches there afterwards, when she sees the blood, now will become tummy. But at 3:55, nothing is tummy. Dayun shaitan. You just look at them right now. You don't go back in time at all. Hill disagrees. Hill goes back a long time. Hill omer mipkida lipkida. You have to go back to the last time she checked herself and she was tar. So let's say 4 days ago she checked herself and hasn't checked herself since. So you have to presume that the blood came out right after she checked herself and she's only noticing it now. Afilu yom harbe. It could even be for many days. So Shammai and Hillel are diametrically opposed. Shammai says no going back. Hillel says you got to go all the way back to the last time she definitely knows that she was tahora because she checked herself. And the Chacham have a middle position. The Chacham lo kidivrei zeh, lo kidivrei zeh. Again, the same lashon. The Chacham say the halach is not like Shammai, that you don't look back at all, but the halach is not like Hillel, that you have to look back all the way. What is the halacha? Ela mi'eis le'eis, if you go back 24-hour period of time, mi'mayit ayidei mi'pekida. So for example, as my case that I gave you, she checked herself 4 days ago, so you only have to go back 24 hours. You don't have to go back 4 days. And that's what it means over here. Mi'eis le'eis, mi'mayit ayidei mi'pekida le'pekida. Going back 24 hours, if the pekida from one, the previous one, till the current one, is more than 24 hours, then you leave out all the extra and you only go back 24 hours. What happens if she did a pekida 12 hours ago? So then you don't have to go back 24 hours. Then you're allowed to go back to the 12-hour point where she checked. So the lesser of the two time periods, it's either going to be 24 hours if the pekida was longer, or it's going to be less than 24 hours, the amount of time of the pekida, from pekida to pekida, in that situation. So these are the three machlokas in between Hillel and Shammai that Rav Huna brings down. The Gemara questions this and says, Vesuleka? Only these three? What about the famous machlokas we have in Gemara in Chagiga? Vika Hillel omer lismok, v'shammai omer shelo lismok. When you go and bring a korban on Yontif, you have to lean on the animal normally. When you bring a korban, you lean on the animal. What about on Yontif? You're not allowed to use an animal on Yontif. So Shammai says, you're not allowed to lean on the animal on Yontif. You won't lean on it. You won't do smicha. Hillel says, lean on it. You're not allowed to lean on it? No, it's a mitzvah to go and lean on it on Yontif. So this is the famous machlokas in Hillel and Shammai. Do you do smicha or not? So how come you don't include that in your list? Why do you say three? It should be four. Well, it says, no, ki kam Rav Huna. When Rav Huna said there's only three, he was talking about hecha deleka pluksa deravasa bahadayu. He's only talking about when Hillel and Shammai are the first people to have this machlokas. But as Rashi points out over here, These three places, Rav Huna said, nobody previously argued about them. Only Hillel and Shammai, so to say, initiated this argument. Avos Smicha, in regards, Rashi says, to the leaning, Kol Ha'avos based in Vanisim, Yosef ben Yoezer, Ad Hillel, Nechluku Ba'am, and Masechus Hagigah. The Gemara Chagigah says that all the Zugos, all the pairs of Tanoim, all the way from the start until Hillel, they also had this Machlokas. And therefore, that's why Rav Huna didn't list it over here. Gemara still asks, Va'ika, Habotzu L'gaz, when a person goes and harvest his grapes to make wine in the wine press. So there's a machlokas there as well. What about those juices that come out while he's bringing them to the wine press? So Shammai Omer Huchsha. Shammai says that they're Muchsha L'kabel Tumah. That type of juice that comes out can be Machsha, something to be Makabel Tumah. You want that wine to come out because you want these grapes for wine. So even though this wine may go to waste, you theoretically could collect it, and therefore it is considered something that you want, v'chiyutan, and therefore it's able, when it comes into contact with something, a food item, for example, it's machshut l'kabel tumah. So Hill says it's not, because bottom line is, you didn't put it in a container and it's going to waste, so therefore you obviously don't want it. So here's another machlokas with Hillel Shammai. How come Rav Huna didn't include it? Someone says, no, barmine. That one wasn't included. Why not? You know why that wasn't included? Because Hillel ultimately retracted their position and they were molded to Beis Shammai, to Shammai that he was right. So therefore, it's not a permanent machlokas between Hillel and Shammai, and Rav Huna only listed permanent machlokas in between Hillel and Shammai. Now we go back and quote the discussion that we brought down yesterday and go through each of those statements in more detail. We'll see what they are as we repeat it. Yosef ben Yoezer, Yosef ben Yochanan, Ish Yerushalayim. This was one of the earlier Zugos. They came well before Hillel. And they had certain statements that they made. Both of them, Gozru, they made the Gzeira on Tuma al Eretz Amen. They made the rabbinical Tuma that the land outside of Eretz Yisrael can be Metame Truma or can be Metame a Kohen, etc. And they also made a similar statement that klei zchuchis, that they can accept tumah. Klei zchuchis are glass utensils, which mean Torah. We don't have any source that they can accept tumah, and the rabbis instituted a rabbinical tumah that they could accept if they became tameh on glass utensils. Now, what are these two statements over here? Mara says, are you telling me that Yosef ben Yoezer, Ish Sredo, and Yosef ben Yochanan, and Ish Yerushalayim, they made this gzeira on the Eretz Akum and on klei zchuchis? For Rabbanan, the Shmonim Shana Gozer. It was the rabbis who lived at the time of the last 80 years of the Beis HaMikdash, the second Beis HaMikdash, and they lived 80 years before the destruction, and they, at that point, made this Gezerah on Tumas Eretz Akum. Rashi points out that this also applies to the Tumah of the Klei Zchukas, but we're not going to be discussing that in the Gemara. In any event, the Yom Rav Kahana said, Kishichol Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yosi, when Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yosi got sick, so people came to visit him. So Shochalo, they sent to him the following messages. We'd like to hear, Rabbi, they told Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yosi, you're a Rabbi, Emor Lanu Beiz Gimel Dvarim Shamar, we delete the word Lanu, I'll explain in a moment why, Gimel Dvarim Shamar Mishum Avich. Tell us a couple of wonderful vertloch, two or three vertloch that your great father, Rav Yossi b'Chalafta, Yeshua was the son of Rav Yossi b'Chalafta, was a great Tani, he was the author of Seder Olam, and that's why they asked him these questions over here which deal with history. In any event, he said, tell us some things that your great father taught you and you can teach us. Now, the Bach says, delete the word over here, Lanu, and the Marsha explains because if they actually were told by Rav Yishmael, Rav Yossi themselves, Shomart Lanu, that he taught us, they wouldn't have forgotten it. So it must be that he taught you, and therefore we delete the word Lanu. In any event, Rabbi Yishmael responds to them, Sholoch Lehem, Kachom Rabba. So did my great father, Rabbi Yossi B'Chalafta, say. He's told us a historical fact. Kuf Pei Shana, Achel Chor Beis Abayis, 180 years before the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, Pashto Malchus HaRashal Ayisrael. Nebuch, that's when the Edomim, that's when the Roman Empire started to subjugate the Jewish people. We were free and declared after being subjugated for all those years by the Yevanim, and now we became subjugated by the Romans. So now, this is 180 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, second Beis HaMikdash. Peishana, 80 years before the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, Achel Chor Vabayis, Gozru Tumah Eretz Amim. They instituted this concept of Tumah, a rabbinical Tumah, on Chutz La'aretz. And the Al Klei Zechuchas. And also that glass utensils could accept Tumah. And he continues the history lesson. Mem Shana, Achel Chor Vabayis, 40 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, second Beis HaMikdash, Gosu Lo Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin was exiled from its place in the Lishkas HaGozis in the Beis HaMikdash. It was a voluntary exile by them. V'yosh Lo, Bechanuyos. And they moved to a different chamber in the Beis HaMikdash. So here we interject and we say, why are you telling us that? What importance does that have? So Rav Yitzchak Bar Dimi says, Lomar shelo danu dine kenosos, that they no longer judge types of penalties, for example, to pay kefel or to pay shloshim for an eved. These are dine knossos and not dine mamonos. So they stop judging dine knossos. For it says, how come? Dine knossos, sol kedaitach, why should they, because they move from the lishkas of the gazes to the lishka called chonios or chonus, why did they stop judging those judgments? So Gemara says, you're right. Ela'e mashalo danu dine nefashos. They no longer were able to judge dine nefashos because those were only allowed based upon psukim to be judged while they were in the lishkas of the gazes. So therefore, that's what Rev Yishmal, Rev Yossi, told the Chachamim who asked him. Now, what do we see over here? That the Gzeira on the Eretz Akum was 80 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, aren't Rav Yossi ben Yoez, Ish Sreda, and Rav Yossi ben Yochanan, Ish Shalayim, they lived much before that? Shmuel says, maybe not. So maybe they only lived 80 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And this really is consistent with what we just said, that they were the ones, Yossi ben Yoez and Yossi ben Yochanan, they were the ones that made this Gzeira 80 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Shmuel says, that's not true. Hatanya. We now go through the descendants of Hillel. Hillel was the Nasi. After him came his son, Vishimon. Afterwards came Hillel's grandson, Shimon's son, Gamliel. And afterwards came Gamliel's son, Vishimon. Nagu b'nisiyusin. They were all the Nisiyim. The word should be bifne, not lifne. Habayis me'ashana. So that started 100 years before the end of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. We had Hillel, Shimon, Gamliel, and Shimon again. So then, this is 100 years before the end of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. V'ilu Yosef ben Yoezer Yisreda. Yosef ben Yochanan Havu Kadmi Tuva. These two great Tanayim lived well before that. They were the earlier Zugos, and Hillel was one of the later Zugos with Shammai. So therefore, how could this be? So obviously, Yosef and Yoezer and Yosef and Yochanan could not have been 80 years before the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. So Gemara says, we turn to the Amid Beis. Elo Asu Inu Gazer Agusha. So they made original Gzeira. The first two, Yosef and Yoezer and Yosef and Yochanan, they made the Gzeira to institute a rabbinical tumor on the land, Agusha, right? Like Gush Katif. Gush Emunim, on the block of land. They would go there, they're Gzeira on the land itself. And if something came into contact with that, you burnt it. So if Truma came into contact with land of the Eretz Akum, either in the land of the Eretz Akum or that land, that Gush, was brought into Eretz Yisrael, and it came into contact with Truma, you'd burn the Truma. The Avira, the Loklum. But just transferring through the air, he went on a wagon, so he didn't touch the ground. So you didn't touch the ground of Chutz Laretz, so then Avira, on the air space, so to say, of Chutz Laretz, they didn't gozer anything, the Loklum. And only later on, at 80 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, Gozer Rabbanon de Peshana, Gozer Avira Lislos. Only then did they institute a new Gezerah that the airspace of Chutz Laretz would also make Truma not able to be eaten, but it didn't make it that you'd burn it, it only made it that you'd hold it in limbo. We talked about this yesterday. If it's Vadai, so to say, Tomei, you can burn it right away. If it's only, we're not sure, or it's what we call Lislos, so then you can't burn it right away because as an issue to destroy Truma. So you have to wait till it spoils itself, and then you get rid of it. So that is the later decree. So the earlier decree was by Yosef ben Yoez and Yosef ben Yochanan just on the Gush, and then later on, it was on the Avir. But that implies, L'meimra, the Chod Gzeirah Sa'avah L'Sreifa, that implies over here that the original Gzeirah, when Yosef ben Yoez and Yosef ben Yochanan, when they were Gozer over here, they initially said that you should burn the Truma that came into contact with this Gush. But that's not true. Farmer Ilfa tells us, Yodayim Tchilas Gezeiros and Lusreifa, only the decree, we had this in yesterday's year, only the decree on Yodayim started off being that it's not Lislos, it started off being the full force of the Gezeira that you burn it. If your hands touch Truma, you burn that Truma right away. You don't even have to wait. You don't have to Lislos. And that was the only one, however, of all these Gezeiros, that was the only one that from the very beginning, from the get-go, it was Lusreifa. Only in regards to hands touching Truma did the rabbi say you go burn it right away. Hamidi Achrin, all the other rabbinical enactments over here, lo, they first started off with being listlos and only later on became a chiyuv to burn them right away. So therefore, this is incorrect. It wasn't that 180 years ago, Yosef ben Yochanan and Yosef ben Yoezer, they instituted on the Gush, and then later on, they instituted on the Avira. That's not the case. What is the case? El Asu Inhu Gozer Agusha Litlos. Originally, the Yosef ben Yoez and Yosef ben Yochanan, they said You know what we have to do over here? We have to make a gzeira because people are going to come into contact with chutzlaritz and it's going to be a problem. So they made a gzeira on the chutzlaritz, but only lislos, that you don't burn it right away. Va'avira lo klum, and they didn't make any gzeira on the airspace of chutzlaritz. And then later on, v'yosu rabbanon de peishana, the rabbis 80 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, they then made gozer agusha lisrov. They made the gzeira that you have to go burn the truma that comes into contact with the gush. And they also instituted at that time va'avira lislos. They instituted a new gzeira over here that if you go into the airspace, you have to go and hold it in abeyance, hold it in limbo until it spoils. Point, that's how we reconcile it. But the Gemara is not happy yet. Gemara says, Vakasi b'usha gozur. We have another source that tells us in Usha, that's where the Sanhedrin had 10 trips before it disbanded. So one of the places it went to was Usha. So therefore, when the Sanhedrin was in Usha, they made the following Gzeira. Did not. There's Gemara in Nida, Gemara in Taras, Mishnah in Taras, where it says, Alvav sveikos sarfin asatruma. There are six situations where the rabbis instituted that you should burn the truma when it's in this sofik situation. What are those? Al sofik beis apras. The first one is, when you have a situation where the truma came into contact with a base of pras. Now, a base of pras, there are a number of different definitions for a base of pras. So Rashi says over here, the definition that we're going to use over here for base of pras is, he says, Sodesha Ovad Bo Kever. There was a grave in this field, now we don't know where it is. And therefore, it's a suffix. When you went with the truma over this area, did you or did you not pass over the grave? That's the way Rashi understands it. That's certainly one of the ways to understand base of pras. But there are other definitions, and Tosu says, I don't like this definition, because according to this, that would be an Issa Deraisa, not an Issa Derabanan. And therefore, Tosu says, you had a grave over here and the field was plowed, so you're not going to have any tumma d'araisa left over here. It's unlikely that you'll have etzem kisaora over here, a piece of bone, and therefore it's only the rabbinical tumma that you have over here. That's the base of pras that Tosa says we're talking about. In any event, you have this sofik over here. The base of pras is in of itself a sofik. So if the truma touches this, you burn the truma, oust this sofik. That's the first one, and the others will be similar to this. Here's why we brought this brisa down, this mishnah down, because this is exactly telling us over here that the gush of the offer of the chutz la'aretz creates over here that you burn it. So here's where you see that they created that you burn the truma, not 80 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, but now when the Sanhedrin was in Usha. So that's going to be the kasha. And you go and burn this at that point, implying that before that, they didn't burn it. And that goes against what we just said. So we really asked our question now, but we'll finish off the mishnah over here. V'yasafik b'gdei am ha'aretz. And am ha'aretz is clothing. You obviously have to be concerned over here, Rashi explains. D'kulu masafka lo shema yoshva aleihem ishto nida. They weren't careful with tumah tara, and maybe his wife sat on these clothing. The clothing becomes what we call a medrash. It becomes an avatuma, and therefore there's always a suffix on the big damaritz. And they touch truma, yuvade burn it as well. If you find utensils in the street, well, maybe they're actually tummy, maybe they're not. If they come into contact with truma, so yuvade burn the truma over there. That's another example over here where it's a suffix, but we burn vadai. If you find spittle over here. So maybe it came from a person who's tameh, maybe it didn't. Maybe it's an avatuma, maybe it's not. So again, it comes into contact with the truma, sofek, we burn the truma. Finally, about sofek meiragli adam, if you find over here urine, and this urine over here goes and touches the truma, so in this situation as well, we have to be concerned that it's tameh, and even shekinegi meiragli behema, even if there's urine that definitely came from an animal from nearby, so in this situation, one might have thought, it's a revusa over here, Rashi says. You might have thought that, well, it's probably like the animal urine, and therefore it's not human urine, so you can be makel. So the answer is no. Even though it's like almost a double suffix over here, you still can't be makel, and you burn the truma. So in all of these situations, alvadei magon, the Tana says over here, if you definitely touch the truma to any one of these suffixes, so then you go and burn it. As the Gemara says, instead of the word v'yah, you used to say shehu sofik tumasin sofik nesa truma. So now you have sofik. Did the truma not become tame? So we burn it. That's what the Tana Kama says over here. And Rav Yossi says, Omer afal sofik magoin b'rishus hayochid sofik. He says even if you're not sure that you touched it, so then we apply the rule of sofik tuma b'rishus hayochid is tame. So therefore, he says even a sofik, did you touch this sofik tuma? You burn it in b'rishus hayochid. The Chum disagree. The Chum in b'rishus hayochid tolan. Even in b'rishus hayochid, it's like a double sofik. Number one, it may not be tame. And number two, it's a sofik. Did you touch it or not? So in b'rishus hayochid, you're tola. You leave it in abeyance, so to say, but you can't eat it. You have to wait till it spoils. But if it's a sofik tuma b'rishus harabim, so then it is tahar. We apply the general rule of sofik tuma b'rishus harabim sveiko tar. All of these dinim are learned out from sota, and we apply them halacha lemaisa in regards to the tumah. And now we get to the point. Bama ula elu vav svekos beusha hiskinu. Now we see that they were in Usha. So how can you tell me that this gzera on the Eretz Akum was 80 years before the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash came into fact much later? So we have a problem. So the Gemara answers, Ella, now we can see the three time periods, 180 years before the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, when Yosef ben Yochanan and Yosef ben Yoezer were around, they made a gzera. Then we have another gzera 80 years before the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, and then we have the gzera that was made during the time of Usha. And here's the final answer to the Gemara. Ella also in who the first two of Yosef ben Yochanan and Yosef ben Yoezer, gozer Agusha Lislos. They made the first gezera on the block of land, on the Chutz Laaretz, on the land of Chutz Laaretz, whether it's in Chutz Laaretz or whether it's born to Eretz Yisrael, that if Truma touches it, that you're tola. You keep the Truma in abeyance until it spoils, and then you get rid of it. But you can't burn it, but you can't eat it. V'avir lo klum. But they didn't make any gezera on the airspace of Chutz Laaretz. Along come the rabbis, Vasu Rabban and Dishwanim Shana, the rabbis that came 80 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, they added on to this. Gozer, Idi, Vidi, Litlos. They said that both of them, now they added on, they left the same for the Gush, that it's still Litlos, but they added on to the Avir, that the Avir now will also be Litlos. And then finally, later on, Vyasu Be'usha, when the Sanhedrin were in Usha, Gozer, Agusha, Lisrof, they upped the ante. They said now on the Gush, on the land itself of Chutz Laaretz, either in Chutz Laaretz or in Eretz Yisrael, now you, if it comes into contact with Truma, you actually burn it, Lisrof. But they left the Avira the same way it was. Vavira, the Kidikai, Kai, that they didn't add on to the Gzera. They only upped the ante for the Gush, but they left that as a Gzera, that the Truma touches it, only Litlos, but not Lisrof. That is the conclusion of this beautiful sukkah. The one other thing that they said that time, Yosef ben Yoezer and Yosef ben Yochanan, was Klei Zechuches also can accept Tumah. Now, my Taima, Gazabu Rabbanu Tumah. Why did they go and make this over here have the capability of accepting Tumah? Why? What were they concerned about? The rabbis don't make gezeros for the fun of it. They make gezeros because there's a concern that if you do something over here, you may come to do an Issa Daraisa. So what was their concern? So Rav Yochanan, Reish Lakish. Rav Yochanan said, in the name of Reish Lakish, this in and of itself is a very unusual formation because Reish Lakish was the Talmud Chavir Rabbi Yochanan. We don't find Rabbi Yochanan often making statements in the name of Reish Lakish. In any event, Rabbi Yochanan said the name of Reish Lakish. Ho l'tchilas b'riyasan minachol. Since, how do you make glass? You make it from sand. Sand is like coming from the ground. It's like earthenware. So shavinu rabbanu kichlicheres. Therefore, the rabbis treated it like klicheres. Klicheres utensils, earthenware utensils certainly can't accept tumah. Therefore, the rabbis instituted, since people could get confused between glass and a klicheres, earthenware and sandware, so to say, so therefore they instituted a rabbinical tumah on klis chuchas. That was the reason, the rationale behind the exera. What questions that? So if you're comparing it to earthenware, elamayata, once you're comparing it to earthenware, lote lehen tahara b'mikvah. So you're not allowed to put earthenware in the mikvah to be metaret. The only way to be metaret earthenware is to break it. So how can we allow you to put glass in the mikvah and be metaret? Oh, maybe you don't? No, alom it's not. But we learned in mikvahs, the elu chotzitzin, the following are considered a chatzitza, an interposition, bekelim, in regards to klei zchuchis, hazefes v'hamor b'klei zchuchis. They are considered an interposition that you can't put it into the mikvah. You have to scrape off, wipe off, get rid of this interposition, this chatzitza over here, and then you can immerse the klei zchuchis in a mikvah. So if it has zefes and mor on it, Rashi explains over here that these are various types of very sticky material, and they're madvikin tuva, they attach themselves very well, and a person wouldn't be happy about this. So therefore, you have to remove this chatzitza if it's there, and it's a dovra makpid, and therefore, you have to remove it. But what do you see? That's not our interest right now, that zefes and the mor are something that have to be removed. Our interest is that a klei zchuchis can certainly be tovled, but earthenware cannot be tovled. So what's going on over here? So more answers. Talk about asking. You know, we're talking about over here. Kigon shenikvu. There was a hole, a puncture over here in the glass, and he filled it in. The hated lasochan aver, and they put in lead. They took molten lead and they filled it in over there, and now they fixed the utensil. And in this situation, we have a machlokas. Rameyer, this is the opinion of Rameyer that we just brought down the Omar. How kol holech achar amaymit? This utensil is now viewed as a lead utensil, and therefore lead utensils can be tovled in the mikvah. We no longer view it as a glass utensil. Where do we see this? The Tanya. This is a brisa. It says, klez chukas shenikvu, if you have glass utensils that became punctured, the hate of lesochan ever, and you put into the hole lead, So Amar Rav Shimon Gamliel. Rav Shimon Gamliel says this is machlokis. Rav Meir is matame. He says that now we treat this glass utensil as lead, and that's why it can go in the mikvah. And this opinion that says that glass utensils can go in the mikvah is going according to Rav Meir. The Chachamim mitarim. The Chachamim, in fact, they say that you are mitar in this situation. We still view it as glass, and glass is compared to earthenware, and therefore earthenware doesn't go in a mikvah. So too, glass doesn't go in a mikvah. So the Chachamim would disagree, and Rav Meir says that it is going to be able to be put into the mikvah. Fine, where it says elamayata lo litmu migaba. So then, if we're making this comparison between an earthenware container and glass, so it has to be compared all the way. So we'll stop at this point over here. We'll pick this up, Mitzvah Hashem, on Matzah Shabbos when I dictate the shir in Mitzvah Hashem for Sunday. I'm always trying to make sure that the shir is dictated the night before, and this way people can have it even the night before if they want, but they can certainly have it any time during the next day. Mitzvah Hashem, everyone should have a wonderful Shabbos, even though you may be listening to this after Shabbos. I hope you had a wonderful Shabbos, and Mitzvah Hashem, we should all be healthy. With that, we conclude today's shir.